You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, October 19th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live depths from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA, on the program today, with just 15 days before what we have prior to called Election Day. The rats begin to flee the SS Trump's comedy cruise. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell sort of kind of claims he'll vote on a Pelosi-Mnuchin compromise if it makes it to the Senate. If he allows it to make it to the Senate. A year out from a right-wing coup that ousted Evo Morales, Bolivia's Socialist Party wins in an overwhelming electoral victory. Pfizer says mid-November the earliest for a vaccine. Meanwhile, more evidence wearing masks makes a huge difference. And that big biker rally in the Dakotas could very well have been responsible for a major spike across the Midwest. Internal strife at the New York Post in the lead up to and in the wake of the Hunter Biden Oppo dump. Trump Roadshow is still attacking Michigan Governor Whitmer, as one is arrested in a plot to kidnap the mayor of Wichita for asking people to wear masks. Early voting begins in Florida. Meanwhile, a Michigan state court stops the absentee ballot extension period. Federal judge, however, quashes Trump's plan to leave 700,000 people without food support. And your local news show may not be your local news. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Like I said at the top of the show, we're now tomorrow marks 2 weeks out from the election day. Florida early voting has started today. In Michigan, as I mentioned, there had been an extension for 2 weeks in which a ballot could arrive if it has been postmarked on election day. But that's been reversed by three judges in Michigan, all of whom were appointed by Rick Snyder. I make this point. It used to be like you don't want to say that because you don't want people to feel like who appointed the judges determines the outcome. But that is, I mean, Brendan, how long have we been doing this now? Joining me today, of course, Matt Leck, Brendan Finn. Right here in my ear. But how long ago was it? Was it like 3 or 4 years ago? I said there 2 or 3 years ago, I said to you, like, when we get a judgment, I want to know who appointed the judges.
There's a house style guide change in about 2017, I would say.
Right.
That became the case.
And I don't think there has, I don't know. There's been one occasion, but I can't think of it, where the ruling is not a function, or I should say, the ruling does not correlate with which president, or in this instance, which chief executive and a governor appointed the judge. That is just the reality of our judicial system now. And I would argue that it is more of a function of the development of a massive machine centered on the Federalist Society on the right that makes this ability to guess who appointed the judges based upon the ruling, because the Federalist Society became this black box that basically produced all of these clones, these judges who we know how they're going to rule in every instance. And they do it. The polarization, at least within the legal field, has been exclusively the purview of the right for the past, I don't know, 20, 30 years. And I hope that we're seeing, we're turning a corner on that. But because the fact of the matter is that that's what the judiciary is. And I think the left needs to sort of, and by the left, I'm talking, you know, center to the left, needs to sort of reevaluate the fantasy or the dream world that they've been living in, that the judiciary is above all that. It's not. It's not. These judges in Michigan said, look, it's not the state's fault that, because there were something like tens of thousands of votes in the primary that were delayed. The voter put their vote in or mailed it in the timely manner. It was postmarked when it needed to be postmarked. And yet you had tens of thousands of votes in Michigan during the primary that were discounted because of just a failure to deliver these things on time. And the state's, it's not the state Supreme Court, it's a state court in Michigan says that, well, I guess it was 6,400 ballots arrived too late during the primary in August. And this Michigan State Appeals Court said the pandemic and delivery woes are not attributable to the state. Yes, that's true. They're not attributable to the state. But if you value the right of your citizens to vote and they do everything that the state has required of them, then it is at least the state has an obligation, right? I mean, in the context of contract law, if I say to you, here's an offer, I'm giving it to you via the mail, you need to respond to me via the mail, and you do so. Once you respond via the mail, because I've set up that parameter of how I want you to respond, we've made the deal. Like, you know, it's the states that says you need to mail this by a certain day for us to count your vote. And if the voter does it, then the state has a certain obligation, at least a reasonable one, seems to me, to count that vote. But not according to these judges, who just coincidentally were appointed by Republican Governor Rick Snyder when he was there, when he was not poisoning the children of Flint. He was also appointing these three judges. So that's why we mentioned that. And I don't know what the implications are. 6,400 in a primary. I don't know how many thousands that's going to be in the general election. But I'd be willing to bet you that the majority of those, based upon all the data we've seen, we can expect those votes to be votes for Joe Biden. The majority of those votes that will not be counted, because they will not have an extension, despite the fact that we have evidence that the post office attempted to slow down the mail. We don't know if they have reportedly reversed, based upon a lawsuit, the policies that were slowing down the mail, but we'll see. And of course, there's a pandemic, so you have more people voting absentee than they have in the past. But that is one of the major problems that we have in this country, is that our right to vote, I've got some bad news for you folks, not sacrosanct as it is made out to be. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is in Macon, Georgia. And back in 2016, I can't remember exactly when it was, But I remember being on Chris Hayes' program and making the point about Donald Trump. It was probably early in his campaign. This guy is like a road comic. I, in another life, spent far too much time in comedy clubs and in Chinese restaurants and in, I don't know, cafeterias and whatnot, doing stand-up. I saw a lot of road comics. Road comics are comics who are making a decent living by doing their show in random places across the country. Sometimes it's comedy clubs. Sometimes it's like, I don't know, a college. Sometimes it can be just in a, like I say, in a Chinese restaurant. They have a, they build a stage and then all of a sudden it's a comedy club. And road comics, they can go into a room. The stuff's not terribly sophisticated because they're not going to come back there. But they can make people laugh in the moment. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Donald Trump. Are they voting for him because of his policies, because they want to drain the swamp? Or are they voting for him because he's entertaining? If I don't have to get a premium TV service if I get this guy on.
Difficult. I said, I can be more presidential than any president in our history, with the possible exception of Abraham Lincoln when he wore the hat. That was tough to beat. That was tough to beat. But do you remember I do it? We had fun with it. We'd say, ladies and gentlemen of Georgia, this is your president, and it is a great honor to be with you tonight. Things are going very well with our country. Our military is building. And, you know, so I could do that. And, you know, within about 3 minutes, everybody would pick up and they'd say, let's get the hell out of here. This guy's... No, we're doing a great job. We're renegotiating these horrible trade deals. We're bringing our people back home. Our soldiers are great heroes. Because I would...
There you go. I mean, I don't think it's hugely funny. And, you know, one of the benefits you get when you're the president, and I sort of get like this a little, this license a little bit too. When I go on like cable news, I'm considered the funny guy. Like, I'm funny for politics. But when I was a comedian, I was not that funny. So you get a little bit of a boost. Like, you show up, you're president, and you're mocking like other presidents. People are going to laugh. It's funny.
My parents' pastor has the same thing going on. People just die for his little jokes because he's funny for a pastor.
Yeah. I mean, that helps. And there he is. And it is, I think that gets underrated. I don't know what the only assessment I can make from that is that the danger of the next Trump could very well be mitigated by their lack of that type of appeal. You know, Tom Cotton is not going to go out there and do that type of shtick. But Trump was.
That's why they needed to pull Reagan in the 80s too, right? Like, you get a skill set that was cultivated outside of Republican politics that can be useful.
So yeah. The next one will be a gamer or something, maybe?
Honestly.
Twitch streamer.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. People like to have someone who is willing to be somewhat self-effacing. And, you know, Biden's got a little bit of that quality. Not a lot, but a little bit. On some level, you can imagine Al Franken would have been an interesting person to have in the Senate at this time. And I'm not convinced that he wouldn't have been maybe a candidate.
Yeah, he should have been VP in 2016, and I think Hillary might have had a good chance because of that exact reason. He could have defused Trump a little bit.
It's possible. I mean, I don't know if it works that way, but you know, where a VP can do that, but it would have been interesting to see. All right, we'll just take a quick break here for our sponsors. Hey, folks, it is election time, as you know, time to choose. In many places around the country, balloting has already started. And whether you've already voted, you still need to vote. It is our chance to choose the best candidates for our government. I think you know where I stand on that. That's a lot of jobs to fill. What if you had to do this every time you needed to hire for your business? My God, you'd be exhausted. Thankfully, there's ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does the work for you. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Here's what happens with ZipRecruiter. And frankly, this is the story of how we got Brendan on the program. You post a job on ZipRecruiter. It goes to over 100 job sites with just one click. I got a lot of response. I mean, I like more than dozens of people. In fact, I ended up interviewing, I think, about a dozen people. And I think, honestly, I interviewed maybe one out of every 10. But then ZipRecruiter's matching technology finds people with the right skills and experience for your job and then actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's how we got Brendan. He was out there just in cyberspace and they yanked him in. It's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter has been huge for my little business here, and I think they can be huge for yours. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. You may be stressed out about the election. You will not be stressed out about hiring when you try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. Meanwhile, we've got this story we're going to be talking about in the New York Post, the Hunter Biden story that sort of fell apart. But one of the things that was sort of disturbing about watching was Twitter and Facebook sort of now randomly deciding that they're going to prohibit people from passing that along. I don't approve with that approach, frankly. But as you know, social media companies get to censor whatever content they don't like. If you want to be the one to decide what you read or watch, not them, you can control their access to your data with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is, well, I don't know if people know what a VPN is, but essentially it is almost like an overlay that you put on whatever you're using. You can use it on your computer. You can use it on your phone. I use it on my phone. I use it on my laptop. And occasionally I'll use it on my iPad. But basically what it does is it hides your IP address from everyone from the point of you moving out into the world through your ISP provider out to social media sites, to places like Netflix. So you can establish, like, I'm actually not in New York. I'm in London. And so I want to see some of that British Netflix stuff. Or you can just basically shroud and protect yourself. With ExpressVPN, tech companies can't see your IP addresses at all. And they encrypt 100% of your data, so you're protected from hackers. ExpressVPN, their software takes about, I don't know, maybe 70 seconds to set up on your computer, on your phone. You tap one button and boom, you're protected. Why give these tech companies a free license to know everything about you and then turn around and sell off your information? Remember, if it's free, you're the product. It's time to take back your privacy at expressvpn.com/majority. When you visit my special link, you're going to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN service for free. And who doesn't like to save money? I do. Again, that's ExpressVPN, ExpressVPN.com/majority, ExpressVPN.com/majority to protect your data today. And lastly, just by chance, I am literally now wearing, but also generally now wearing, Brendan's favorite socks. not literally his socks, but his favorite brand of socks. I had no idea.
Sam asked for my favorite socks. I said, let's talk about that at my performance review.
You wouldn't tell me what it was, but I stumbled on them. Features. They've engineered a sock specifically tailored for golf, for exercise, for walking, and literally, like when I say engineered, they have engineered it. It is, Brendan talks about it as if it, like, these things have radically, fundamentally changed his life. I got to say, I'm loving them. I bought a bunch more. Runners worldwide have already made features their sock of choice. Now, golfers are doing it, and just even guys like me who are just like walking a lot. I mean, I'm not a runner. I'm not a golfer, but I'm a walker. And occasionally I'll run around and chase Saul. But I'm wearing right now a pair of Elites with a light cushion. I think it's the quarter length, not the full height. That's the mini crew. Maybe it's the mini crew. But features Elite golf sock keeps the full feet cool and dry and blister free. And they provide a custom-like fit that won't bunch or slip during your backswing or your walking or your jogging. You're mostly a jogger, right, Brendan?
Yeah, I actually wore them a pair this morning when I was running. The ankle socks.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm trying to push the whole thing. Like, you don't have to be doing that to enjoy them.
I'm wearing them right now too.
I got my my Elite, and I bought a bunch of the Merinos, and they're left right socks. They're literally engineered for your specific side of your foot. They have zone-specific compression. It gives you targeted support. Each pair of features are made with anatomical design that conforms, like I say, to the left and to the right foot. Molded fit. Features help you push your game further without wearing down your feet. Honestly, it feels, I don't know how to describe it. It feels invigorating, and they're a lower profile but more padding. I don't know how that's quite possible, but it is. Features socks will change how you feel about socks forever. And you can get $10 off with your first pair of features, F-E-E-T-U-R-E-S, when you use the code MAJORITY at features.com. That's the code MAJORITY, features.com, promo code MAJORITY for $10 off your first pair of features. Okay, let's get back into this. Right now, there's new stories breaking at the moment about this. Over the weekend, you had Nancy Pelosi. And remember where we are in terms of COVID relief here. We are 6 months out from the last round of any type of economic relief for the country. We had the CARES Act, which provided desperately needed expansion of unemployment benefits, direct payments to people. It also provided basically a huge backstop to corporate America to loan, to borrow and consolidate. We're going to have real problems from that first CARES Act down the road. But in the meantime, it also provided stuff that people needed. Then there was the Paycheck Protection Program, which allowed for loans to small businesses, and a certain amount of that was forgivable loans, essentially grants, if you spent it all on payroll over the course of like 8 weeks. And then there was another round because we found that like our banking system is sort of corrupt in a way. And it's all, if you didn't have a relationship with a banker, and I don't mean like a personal one, but I mean a business relationship with a bank. If you were a small business and you didn't know the name of somebody at your bank, or even if you did and your accounts were small, you were put way down on the list and you did not get any money. If you were a person of color, you're also more likely to not have that kind of relationship. If you're a woman, you're also more likely, owning a business, to not have that kind of relationship, which shows you just the sort of the structural and systemic racism and misogyny, if you want to talk about that. Maybe it's like a soft racism and a soft misogyny. There's just not the opportunities because you're not one of the guys. And so there was a round two of the Paycheck Protection Program. A significant portion of that money, maybe a third of it, was never spent because by that point, a lot of businesses had simply gone under or had gotten rid of their employees. And then we had no funding for states, no funding for cities. We're starting to see massive cuts from states and cities across the country. This is a real problem. If you look at the one of the big reasons there was a slow recovery under Obama was because states and cities did not get the funding they needed. If you go back and look back at every recovery that has happened after any recession over the past 40 or 50 years, Clinton, Reagan, Bush 1, Bush 2, you will see a surge in state and municipal hiring. And that is what drives these recoveries. But there needs to be funds for states and cities. They cannot deficit spend like our federal government can because they don't produce their own money. Money does not grow on trees. It grows on the ledgers of the federal government, period. You don't even need to water it. Just they can actually just write it out. So we have been stuck in this situation. Nancy Pelosi was convinced that we would get state and city funding. She admonished, I think it was Jake Tapper, back in April, 6 months ago. I think she expected it to come a little bit earlier. Then they passed the HEROES Act in the House, but that doesn't make law. You need it to be passed in the Senate. The HEROES Act was for about $3 trillion. Some of it very good, some of it really horrible. The idea of subsidizing COBRA, for instance. But Mitch McConnell wouldn't give it a hearing. So about a month ago, the Democrats took another bite at the apple. They dropped it down to $2.2 trillion and passed that in the House. That $2.2 trillion structured very similar to the first HEROES Act, but just with shorter timelines. So less money. And now she's in negotiations with Steve Mnuchin in the White House, although Donald Trump has turned that off and on at different points. And here she is talking about what they need from the White House to pass a third bill in the House for COVID relief. Here she is on with George Stephanopoulos this weekend, and she's cleaned up some of her talking points. Here it is.
Would be.
Bottom line, Madam Speaker, are Americans going to get relief before Election Day?
Well, that depends on the administration. The fact is that we cannot, the heart of the matter is to stop the spread of the virus. Now, let me speak to you from the standpoint of children, because that is my why. That is why I am in government and politics. For the children, we're having a big debate with them now over earned income tax credit. They get a tax break to the richest people in America. We want a earned income tax credit, child tax credit, child independent tax credit for the children. 6 to 8 million, depending on whose calculation you use, million kids are now people are in poverty in our country, and these are many of them are children. So this will alleviate, take millions of children out of poverty, send them to schools that take money to have the separation, the ventilation of the number of teachers there to teach them, have the correct this coronavirus that is affecting Black and Hispanic children in much greater way than white kids. And that takes us all back to state and local government, which Fine. Is the source of health care, education, first responders, police and fire, food, sanitation, and the rest. There's a oneness to this. I think we can get there. But if you think of it in terms of the children and child care, they're rejecting our number on child care, which is greatly reduced, but they're rejecting it, saying child care is very, people can't go to work if their children can't go to school.
All right, so there you have it. I mean, there's an upgrade in the talking points. They're still not exactly where it's clear as you'd want them to be. But essentially, the problem is that the White House is not offering things like substantial money for testing and tracing programs. They're not offering enough money for cities and states who are providing, like she says, food, nutrition, safety, essentially for children, particularly ones living in poverty. So that's the hang up. As of yesterday, Nancy Pelosi had said the White House has 48 hours to give a counterproposal, a sufficient counterproposal to what the Democrats have passed in the House. And because she needs time, she says, to be able to get it through the House if we're going to do this before the election. Donald Trump wants to put this out before the election. Because it's like, I don't know, it's like in Survivor, you know, you have a one of those immunity idols. You don't want to get voted out with that in your pocket. Donald Trump does not want to lose this election because he didn't sign off on a big COVID relief bill. But he's being told by Mitch McConnell and the Republicans that if you do this, our voters are going to be upset at you and they're not going to do anything. This is just the most absurd argument I've ever heard. Republican Party has completely abandoned their fictional posture about fiscal discipline. It was always fictional. But they completely abandoned this thing years ago. And the idea that there's a single voter out there who's going to say, well, I was going to vote for Donald Trump, but this whole thing where he's sending out $1,200 to everybody and expanding payments to cities and states, that the idea that Donald Trump believes that is shocking to me. But the idea that anybody else would believe that the Republicans actually believe that at this point, that's absurd. And, you know, you can start to see the sort of the hints of people playing along with this game that the Republicans care about fiscal responsibility. And frankly, I don't think that we should be fiscally responsible now, or I should say that fiscal responsibility right now means spending money, the government spending money, providing for people in need, providing support for businesses, providing money so that people don't feel compelled to go out and take a risk during a pandemic. We have the money. Our government can print the money. There is no inflation. We can do this. But the bottom line is that the Republicans have been pretending that you cannot do this until, of course, the Trump administration, when it came time to give massive tax cuts to rich people, when it came time to spend trillions of dollars on COVID relief. But when they start talking about fiscal austerity, that is their way of saying, we think there's a chance that Joe Biden's going to win. We think there's a good chance that Joe Biden's going to win. So we're now having to pivot again. So when Ben Sasse pretends to criticize the president privately and then just happens to get the audio got out, when Mitch McConnell starts talking about fiscal discipline, when other Republicans start talking about fiscal discipline, when that's when you know they're afraid that Trump is going to lose. And Mitch McConnell doesn't want to pass anything that's going to make it in any way helpful to the American public if Joe Biden is going to be president. And so that's where we're at now. Apparently, this is what the White House, through Mark Meadows, says that Mitch McConnell, and this is coming from Jeff Stein in the Washington Post, says that Mitch McConnell has agreed to put a bipartisan agreement between Pelosi and Mnuchin to a vote in the Senate, despite Republican opposition. Now, it is hard to know whether this means that McConnell is convinced that the White House will not agree to a deal with Pelosi. Or if what McConnell's trying to do is take pressure off of some of his senators who are getting destroyed in their home states because they're standing in the way of some type of COVID relief, and he is now trying to blame Donald Trump. And, of course, Pelosi. But Pelosi's already passed something. I mean, this suggests to me that McConnell is feeling pressure from somewhere. And he is trying to push it off. This is a hot potato, folks. And he is throwing it to the White House. Now, Mark Meadows is also one of those guys who you can imagine, as soon as Donald Trump is gone, is talking about fiscal discipline and austerity. But we will see. There are now 36 hours left on Nancy Pelosi's, maybe 24 hours left on Nancy Pelosi's ultimatum. We shall see. I mean, I think we have a situation where they are both on the brink, and they are both trying to. Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to do anything that's going to help Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell doesn't want to do anything that helps Nancy Pelosi or Joe Biden. Donald Trump wants to help himself, but can't seem to, but is afraid of losing some Republican support, I guess, in the Senate. And that's where we're at. Personally, I think if Nancy Pelosi has the ability to get a decent deal right now, you do it, because you're also banking on Joe Biden winning. If Joe Biden doesn't win, the American people are probably going to get a decent amount of money from Donald Trump, I think. Maybe not. But either way, it's hard for me to imagine that Donald Trump is going to get that much of a benefit this short out of time from the election. Here's what Meadows said. The Senate Republicans have been very vocal in terms of their lack of support of a number that's even close to what the president has already supported. There would be some in the Senate who would support it. Whether there's enough votes to get to the 60-vote threshold, that's up to Leader McConnell. I think they're basically kicking this hot potato back and forth. Meadow claims he's hopeful of a deal by tomorrow, a deadline set by Pelosi, but also accuses her of refusing to compromise. The 60-vote thing is, all Mitch McConnell needs to do is to provide 16 votes, I think it is. Maybe 14 votes. It depends on who shows up. You don't need all the Republicans. You just need 16 of them, because you've already got 44 votes on the Democratic side, 46 votes on the Democratic side. So I guess we will see what happens there. I mean, if, let's put it this way. This is the question for Nancy Pelosi. If Joe Biden wins, there will be no relief for the American public, at least until January 21st, at least. And because you will, a Republican-controlled Senate and a Republican president who have lost the election are not going to, in the lame duck, provide any benefit to the American public that could in any way make things less bad for them to the benefit of Joe Biden. They're not going to do it. And assuming that the Democrats take the Senate and they take the House and they take the presidency, Joe Biden becomes president on January 21st. And then they're going to have to pass through reconciliation, because they may not have a veto, a filibuster-proof majority, a big relief package. So nothing's going to get out the door until middle February. That's 5 months from now. 5 months ago was May. So the stakes are very high here, particularly for the American public. I'm not even convinced that necessarily the politics here is that anybody's fortunes are really tied up in this in the way that they seem to, but the fortunes of the American public are. So, I don't know. Hard to count on these people to do the right thing. Meanwhile, speaking of doing the right thing, I saw this chart about masks. Before we play it, let's play this clip from Matt's hometown, right? Fargo? Oh, no, wait, you're not from Fargo, right, Matt?
That's where I went to college.
Okay. Did you ever run into any of the city councilors there?
I did not, no.
Well, this is the Fargo City Councilman, Dave Pipecorn. Is that how we pronounce his name? Pipecorn.
Yep.
He's the deputy mayor and city commissioner of Fargo. This is a meeting about the idea. And as you know, Matt, when you had that Sturgis bike rally, was that in South Dakota or North Dakota?
That's South Dakota.
That thing, everybody knew it was going to be a super spreader. Everybody was saying it in the run-up, and they have that the governor there, Rome, is that her name?
Yep.
They knew it was going to be a super spreader event. Nobody cared, and now you've got it. You've got the Dakotas, you've got Minnesota, Wisconsin. There's no way to really totally track this, but they believe that it may have spread it like all in all parts of the country around the Midwest. And so here is so they're starting to talk about mandatory masks. Here is the city councilman, and this is why he's not going to. We are 7 months into this now. This is just amazing to me.
It's not fear. And the facts are, I'm just as protected as you are wearing that mask of COVID-19. COVID-19 passes right through that mask. Isn't that correct?
No, it isn't.
No. Okay, no public comment.
So, Mr. Chair,
I'll learn not to ask rhetorical questions to the crowd.
I apologize, but basically, a virus, it goes right through the mask. And so, for us to start mandating something that doesn't work, that doesn't make sense. And as far as the people, okay, here's how it goes. Once again, if you behave yourselves, you can stay in the room. You're welcome to, but if you don't, you're going to be asked to leave. And if you don't leave, then the police will escort you out. Is that clear?
Let's just restore order.
All right.
Let's go ahead and make your comments, please.
The masks are not effective with a virus, period. That's proven. The coronavirus passes through. And so it's false to tell people that they're going to be safe by wearing that. And as far as sitting 6 feet apart, it's liberty. If you don't want to sit next to each other, then you don't have to. You can go someplace else or watch it on TV or on the internet. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Gary.
Yeah, no one's going to convince anyone of anything at this point. You know, there's some people who believe it's certain, you know, facts and numbers, and the other side can bring up facts and numbers too. So I'm not even going to try to attempt to ask that rhetorical question. What I want everyone to consider is the enforcement.
So that guy was going like, well, we can never really know what the actual truth is about these things. So let's just talk about how hard it would be to enforce. So we shouldn't do this. You know, as opposed to the idea of like, well, you know, even if you're not arresting people for not wearing masks, it might be a good idea to just say that you should, and that we're going to make it mandatory. That signals it is completely uncontroversial to say that when mask wearing is made mandatory in municipalities, states, or whatever it is, that compliance goes up, even if you're not actually sending out squads of people to make sure that people comply. But just to be clear, do masks prevent the spread of COVID? We know the CDC has said, in the case of Arizona, yes, it dramatically reduced the amount of transmission once mask usage was adopted. When you're wearing, there's two different types of masks, essentially, for the sake of this conversation. One is an N95 mask. If it's around you tightly like this, it will protect you from COVID. You could still theoretically get it in your eyes. If you wear a shield, you're very protected. As long as you're wearing that, you could be exposed to it and still not get it, because you wouldn't breathe it in. If you're wearing a cloth mask, you have still less of a chance than getting it if you're wearing nothing, but it is not as a complete barrier as an N95 mask, because an N95 mask is designed to make sure that no particle over whatever it is, 95, I know it's not microns. Is it microns? I don't know. Can't get in. But a cloth mask, it is possible for it to get in. But the cloth mask also, if everybody's wearing one, prevents it from being spread out into the air as effectively as if you had no mask on. And that is why, look at this map here. This was posted by Tom Frieden. This is data from the Delphi COVID cast, covidcast.cmu.edu. I'm not sure what university this is. But it is a percentage of masks in public most or all the time on October 7th. It's a map of the United States. And the darker the color is on the map, the shade of blue-green, I don't know what you call that, a chartreuse, the ocean blue or something, the darker the color is, the more masks are being worn. And then turn your eyes to the image to the right of it, and percent of who know someone is sick. And it is exactly the opposite. In areas where masks are ubiquitous, you are seeing a much less density of people who have COVID right now. That's just the fact. I mean, it really is amazing when you look at this. Like, there, it is almost the inverse. It's all in orange and red and sort of burnt sienna, I guess. And the darkness is completely the opposite of how light it is on the mask wearing. It's there it is. I mean, it's really rather indisputable. What's going on in Dakota, Matt?
Unbroken Republican power of basically North and South Dakota legislatures.
Fair enough. Here is Alex Azar claiming that, you know, in addressing the fact that Trump is rallying in a state like Wisconsin, they are building field hospitals in Wisconsin. They're building field hospitals there now. They're right on the brink. And we're entering flu season. Hopefully the flu will be down because some people are wearing masks. But here is Alex Azar justifying Trump doing these COVID rallies. And I'll remind you, Alex Azar is the head of the Health and Human Services of the U.S. government.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, how are Americans supposed to take your advice here if the president of the United States doesn't take your advice? In fact, he was in the state of Wisconsin. The state of Wisconsin, you guys at the task force have warned the state of Wisconsin they're in the red zone. Big events are a bad idea right now. And the president's campaign did what? Held a big event in a state in the red zone. So again, I go back to this. What example is being set by the federal government?
Well, Chuck, you know, we're seeing an increase in cases in states, whether red or blue or open or closed. We're seeing an explosion of cases in Europe. Europe, the most locked down part of the Western democracies, and they're seeing an explosion of cases. They've got more cases per million than we have in the United States. Some countries on a population adjusted basis have 2-3 times what we have in the U.S. The ticket is in our own hands, Chuck. It's what I talked about at the outset. It's about those basic public health mitigation steps. We have it in our individual control. It's our ticket to be reconnected to education, to worship, to work, right, to health care, and also to our public and civic life, Chuck. Wear a face covering when you right can't be socially distant, Chuck.
And so why has that message so difficult for the president?
I think it's a difficult message for all Western democracies. We're seeing that in Europe. People are tired. The American people have given so much. People of Europe have given so much, Chuck. They've been locked down. They've been isolated, and they're tired. But the point is, we're so close. Hang in there with us. We are so close. We are weeks away from monoclonal antibodies for you, for safe and effective vaccines. We need to bridge to that day. So please, just give us a bit more time of your individual responsible behavior of washing your hands, watch your distance, wear your face coverings when you can't watch your distance, Chuck.
Wow.
Very reassuring tone.
Yes. We're almost there, except for now we're hitting peaks that we haven't seen in months and months and months. Almost there. There's almost a full, there was a Washington Post piece about the full revolt that is on now amongst the task force, his appointed task force on coronavirus. Fauci seems to basically be done. He's basically done. I think he went on 60 Minutes last night. He said, I don't talk to the White House. They don't talk to me. I think they're basically, they're all saying like, we're, you know, And the scary part is, I mean, the scary part is that Donald Trump could win the election. The other scary part is that Donald Trump could lose the election. Like, the guy's still going to be president for 3 or 4 months if he loses. And he's going to be a little bit upset that he lost, and he doesn't seem to care about people. And so I think, you know, what we're seeing with the people associated with the task force, those people who are not Trump cronies, starting to distance themselves and trying to establish like, hey, we're going to need to run this asylum for a couple months without the help of any type of leadership. Meanwhile, we got 10 minutes left. Let's go into what's happening at the New York Post. So the New York Post the other day, I guess this is last week, was it Friday or Thursday? I can't even remember what time anything is anymore. They ran a story that was ostensibly about a computer that was dropped off at a computer repair store. The person who dropped it off never came to get it. On that hard drive of that computer, the computer repair place found emails and apparently pictures of Hunter Biden looking like he's got a drug problem, essentially. Text between Joe Biden and Hunter Biden where Joe Biden is, you know, talking to his son like you would imagine a heartbroken dad would if the son was having a drug problem. There is also ostensibly an email that says something to the effect of like somebody writing to Hunter Biden, met with your dad, thank you. What is not there that we haven't seen is any type of implication that Joe Biden or any evidence that Joe Biden did anything or benefited in any way from his son's involvement with Burisma. Now, let's be clear. There is a problem in my mind with family members of politicians trading off of their last name and getting jobs. I would be a liar and inconsistent if I didn't say that. I had a problem when, you know, who was it? The I don't know. I have a problem with Meghan McCain having a TV career because her dad was Senator McCain. I have a problem with Abby Hunt having a TV career when she, you know, I had a problem when Chelsea Clinton got a job at NBC News. Highly paid job when there were other journalists out there who could have used the work because of her name. There is no doubt that there has been dozens of examples of politician brothers, sisters, cousins who get jobs because they are supposedly close to the politician. And then we see that obviously nepotism is not reserved just for politicians. It's more egregious when it comes to politicians in some way because their power is a function of supposedly our democracy and taxpayers. But it is a dynamic that happens across the board. But there is no indication that when Hunter Biden sold traded on his last name and supposedly his ability to get his dad on the phone, that was in any way that Joe Biden fulfilled any of the things that whatever those patrons would have wanted, right? There's no evidence of that. It doesn't make the nepotism any less horrific. I'm not exactly sure how you stop it. Someone runs for office. I mean, can you basically say like no one in their family can get a job based upon it? I mean, I don't know how that works, but nevertheless, so this hard drive ends up in a computer repair store. And the guy does whatever he does. He informs the FBI. There's an FBI subpoena, unclear based upon what. And then he clones the drive and he gives one to Rudy Giuliani, which is what everybody does anyways. I don't think I've ever taken my computer into a computer repair store where I wasn't expecting someone to clone the hard drive and give it to Rudy Giuliani. That's like the first thing you do, I think, in computer repair, right? I think you check and see if like the data is okay. And then the next thing you do is you clone it and you give it to Rudy Giuliani. But apparently at the New York Post, they thought this story was so dubious that there was no writer who would put their byline on it. They wouldn't sign on to the story. And it has created all sorts of problems at the Post. Here is Steve Ducey realizing like this isn't going to work. And I want to be clear here. I said this during impeachment. If it wasn't for impeachment, this stuff would be sticking. This would be the culmination of a months long investigation. Now, the Senate did an investigation to all this and they dropped it like a hot potato. The Republicans in the Senate did. They got nothing. But had there not been impeachment, this would be the entire story right now. Here's Steve Ducey basically trying to tell his buddies, like, I don't think this is going to stick.
So you got to figure the president's going to try to bring up Hunter Biden in some way.
Has to.
And the base loves to hear that stuff. But what the consultants are telling the president is in the race to the final 15 days, do as much about the economy as you possibly can. And essentially, the best message is President Trump built a great economy. Then COVID screwed things up. And President Trump is better at rebuilding than Joe Biden. That's the message they would like to see.
Yeah, because of Hunter. I just think this Hunter Biden thing is just not. It's not that compelling from an electoral standpoint. And I don't quite see the evidence of any corruption on the part of Joe Biden. The nepotism is just a problem. Like, I don't know. What do you guys think you can do about that?
Well, I think Trump is the wrong person to be making the case that petty influence dealing is a problem, right? Like, I mean, how many people have been staying at Trump Towers and, you know, clearing patents for his kids, right? Like, I don't know.
Right. Trump is like the perfect guy to show how that could be corrupting. and in which way you do it. Biden, I think, just shows us that like nepotism is rampant. And this is a corruption, you know, this is a corruption on behalf of a Burisma, maybe. But, you know, we have no control over that company. I don't know how you would even control it in this country, though. I mean, how would you? That kind of nepotism. Here's the amazing thing, too, about... I want to play this Ron Johnson thing. Well, let's play this. Here's John Ratcliffe. He is the Trump-appointed head of the DNI. We'll just play this clip quick.
Tell us what's real and what's fake. Is this Russian disinformation, Director?
So, Maria, it's funny that some of the people that complain the most about intelligence being politicized are the ones politicizing intelligence. And unfortunately, in this case, it is Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who, as you pointed out on Friday, said that the intelligence community believes that Hunter Biden's laptop and the emails on it are part of some Russian disinformation campaign. Let me be clear. The intelligence community doesn't believe that because there's no intelligence that supports that. And we have shared no intelligence with Chairman Schiff or any other member of Congress that Hunter Biden's laptop is part of some Russian disinformation campaign. It's simply not true. And this is exactly what I said I would stop when I became the director of national intelligence. And that's people using the intelligence community to leverage some political narrative. And in this case, apparently Chairman Schiff wants anything against his preferred political candidate to be deemed as not real and is using the intelligence community or attempting to use the intelligence community to say there's nothing to see here. Don't drag the intelligence community into this. Hunter Biden's laptop is not part of some Russian disinformation campaign, and I think it's clear that the American people know that.
Do we know that it was Hunter Biden's laptop? If there was a subpoena from the FBI, like, how do we know this information? It's just Giuliani brought it out? Where did the subpoena lead to? Why isn't Donald Trump's Bill Barr's FBI? Why are they not pursuing this?
Yeah, this reminds me of David Dayan's book title, Chain of Custody is the problem here, right, with this laptop?
Yeah, there's a bit of a problem with the chain of custody. Now, I don't know if any of the Biden people have denied it or they just ignored the whole thing. I don't know what value it is of denying. It doesn't matter. I mean, 40% of the Republican Party believes that the Democratic Party is just one big pedophile ring. I mean, what's the point of denying any of this stuff? We will talk more about that in the next hour. Ron Johnson really embarrassed himself, if you can believe it. In the meantime, we will be back tomorrow. We've got a great interview lined up for you. We will see you then. If you're sticking around for the next hour plus with us, good. We just said goodbye to our choice viewers. The show is simulcast. This show is simulcast on the Peacock app on the Choice channel. So if you get the Peacock app, it is available for free. I think they have a couple minutes of ads. They cut out our ads. They put in their own, I guess. And you can get the Peacock app. And all you got to do is search the Majority Report of Sam Cedar, and you can see us. They play it a couple of times in the evening. So if you missed any part of this show or you want to see different graphics, I don't know. I guess they don't like Matt and Brendan's graphics. That's all right. You guys don't feel bad about that, do you?
No.
All right. Just a reminder, this show relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. It is Monday. There is no Miki show. You can go to youtube.com, the No Miki Show, and check out last week's shows. She had some great shows, got great panelists. Check that out. patreon.com/the No Miki Show. And also, don't forget, The Antifada, patreon.com/TheAntifada. Check out, they've got all new shows flowing through there. Matt, what's going on TVBS this week?
Yeah, Joshua Kahn Russell is going to join us tomorrow night. We're going to talk about the Bolivian elections and who isn't talking about the Bolivian elections that happened yesterday, and some other stuff. So check that out tomorrow night, patreon.com/TMBS and the Michael Brook Show on YouTube.
Yeah, we should talk about that just a little bit in the fun half. But that was a massive victory. You need to get over 50%, and it does not appear there's going to be a runoff. Now, still not 100% clear on, you know, what's going to happen next there. But both the sort of centrist and far right candidates failed to get 50% between the two of them.
So what you like to see happen to the far right at the ballot box. And Luis Arce of MAS, it looks like he got 52%. So yeah, he'll just lead the country now.
And he was Morales's VP or minister of I can't remember what.
Yeah, I can't remember that. But I do know Zizek specifically mentioned him to Michael when they talked about it over a year ago as like the future of MAS. So it's in good hands, it looks like.
Yeah, and this is and MAS, of course, is the Movement Towards Socialism Party. I'm not sure what it is in Spanish. But this is
Movimiento al Socialismo, I think is what it is.
Oh, well, good for you. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll talk a little bit more about this on the other side. I mean, in many respects, it's not, you don't call it really a comeback. It really more and more looks like this right-wing coup, which was backed by the United States, was an interregnum. Is that what you would call that? An interregnum?
Yeah, a speed bump on the way towards building socialism in Bolivia is what I hope to call it.
I think like there is a consistency of what the Bolivian people wanted. And for a while, there was a little bit of a hiccup. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, wow. Apparently there's a story. All right, we'll play this in a second. All right, we'll see you in the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. Join us there if you will.
RM for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ the Energy song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Fuck you, reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Almost says what?
Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank. Hell out of bank.
All lives matter.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black. African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100.
Can't not to hustle. Come on! Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on! What? Come on! What? Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.